159 Ivy Street. Chapter 5, 28 minutes to midnight as each day passed, marching toward the last day of the year, Braddon felt like a dead man walking, not toward redemption, but toward the gallows he had built himself. Time did not move forward. It dragged him by the collar. He hadn't spoken to Josephine since she hung up abruptly on Christmas. 6 days without Josephine's voice felt longer than the 7 years he'd spent in boarding school as a child, longer than any silence he'd ever learned to endure. She hadn't answered a single message since Christmas. The abruptness of that final click, the sound of absence replacing breath, still rang in his ears. One careless syllable, one name spoken without thought. A slip of the tongue with the mention of Lisa struck an untrustworthy tone. Suspicion, unfounded or not, it's a woman's prerogative to be jealous without cause. It was astonishing how quickly trust could fracture, not with proof, not with betrayal, but with implication. Suspicion, unfounded or not, had a way of blooming in the dark. And if jealousy had rules, this was one of them. A woman didn't need evidence, only instinct. Josephine's instincts were as sure as a compass pointing north. Lisa was from a different time in a distant past. The winds always find a way to brush against your cheeks to refresh hidden memories. It was no gentle breeze for Braddon, it was a slap on his face. What am I wearing tonight? Do I care? Jose hasn't answered any of my messages, damn it. I must have called her 30 times since we last spoke, that was 6 days ago. It's killing me. His phone lay face up on the dresser, cruel in its silence. 30 calls, more texts than he cared to count. Each message left unsent felt heavier than the last, stacking up like unanswered prayers. Braddon was in a pit, emotional sinkholes he knew how to fill with isolation and routine. Loneliness had always been familiar, almost domestic, but this was different. This pit echoed. It was wider, deeper. However, this time was different. He realized he was inside the pit but felt utterly alone for the first time. What did I do? That night with Lisa was so long ago. An orphaned moment, detached from meaning, or so he had convinced himself. It had never occurred to him that memory didn't age the same way facts did. I didn't think. That was my crime. Braddon continued to get dressed for the office party. He was already 20 minutes late, but he didn't care. He might as well have walked through the doors at 11:59. He didn't give a shit about the party. This was Lisa's office party that brought on these 6 days of misery, traced back to this single obligation. Braddon knew precisely who to blame himself. Braddon decides to take a cab instead of driving to the office. He planned to be utterly shit-faced so he could forget Josephine for a while. He was not convinced that it would happen, but he's hoping the booze will be persuasively convincing tonight. The office buzzed with forced cheer and champagne courage when he arrived. Music pulsed low enough to allow conversation, but loud enough to excuse emotional distance. Hey Braddon, it's about time you showed up. Just because you're the company's best photographer, you need to be fashionably late. Andy. Been with the company a few years longer than Braddon, but he's a fan. Braddon's photography portfolio brings emotions to the beholder, and that's what Andy admired the most. Most photographers' work lacks the human element, so it's commercial-grade productions, a dime a dozen. Braddon smiled automatically. Andy, how the hell are you? I saw the pre-press of your Iceland tourism cover, nice. Braddon was cordial about Andy's Iceland photos, which were commercial grade, and he hated that. Braddon's motto was not to give what the client has asked, but to provide what they hadn't realized. Thanks, Braddon, but I know you don't mean it, but that's okay. It pays the bills, right? Braddon nodded. That was the difference between them. Andy produced what was asked. Braddon delivered what people didn't yet know they needed. Andy decides to work the room elsewhere, away from Braddon, now sitting on a stool by the bar. Oh, by the way, Andy added, lowering his voice just slightly. Lisa's looking for you. The smile Andy gave him this time carried something else. Envy, amusement, maybe relief that it wasn't him. Andy slipped away before Braddon could respond. He found refuge at the bar. Good evening, bartender. The female mixologist behind the counter looked up, red hair catching the light in a way that immediately disarmed him. Not artificial, not theatrical. Just right, not a cartoon red and not orange. Redheads are kryptonite to Braddon. He has this acute preoccupation with every red-haired woman he has ever met. Oh my God, lucky me, you have red hair. She raised an eyebrow, wasn't sure if it was a complaint or a compliment. Either way, he's the customer. Is there a problem with redheads or do you have a problem? Neither. In fact, just the opposite. My knees go weak when I see a beautiful woman with red hair, and it has nothing to do with playing tennis that destroyed my knees. She laughed despite herself. Ah, so you're a stalker with bad knees looking for redheads. Should I call security now? First, only on special occasions. Second, maybe you should. But first, can you please pour me a revolver, bourbon, sweet vermouth, and coffee liqueur? At least I won't be thirsty when they haul me to jail. She blinked. You're serious. Deadly. A classic bar flirtation with your favorite bartender in any gin joint in all the towns in all the world. Braden has a redhead for a bartender on the night he plans to be completely wasted. Amanda was her name, bartending was her game, and she's good at it. Hi, let's start over. I am Amanda. I haven't made a revolver since, in fact, I can't remember if I have ever made one. Well, she said, that makes you memorable. I like that. Hello, Amanda. A pleasure to meet you. Can I assume that you're no longer calling security on me? Don't answer that. The night is still young. You might still get your chance. Now about my drink. For 4 fleeting minutes, Braden forgot the ache in his chest. Back at home, Josephine was rushing around to get her hair and makeup done while Anthony was still in the shower. She thought of Braden every day since they last spoke. Am I overreacting? Who is Lisa anyway, and why am I feeling like this? I have no right to be jealous. Jealous of what? I don't understand. Deep down, Josephine was terrified of getting hurt at this juncture of her life. It's all needles and pins, and depending on the day, she could fall off an emotional cliff and never be able to climb back. Josephine's reaction was her way of protecting herself from getting hurt. So what was this pain she's feeling? An emptiness filled just 6 nights ago while lying in bed on a phone call. A call that she abruptly hung up, emptied her heart. Josephine was applying her eyeliner. The woman she saw in the mirror looked sad and heartbroken. She didn't like what she saw. Jealousy made no sense, she knew that. She hadn't earned the right to it. And yet, there it was, tight in her chest, sharp behind her ribs. Mom, I will get dressed now. I will be ready in 10 minutes. I am so excited about this party. Will Braden be there? Josephine's heart literally stopped when Anthony called out Braden's name. She can't believe that he still remembers Braden from Christmas Day. It made her smile, but at the same time, sadder than before. I think I have made a mistake. Braden has left so many messages, but I didn't return any of his calls. So why did I save all the messages in the machine? I didn't erase any of them. I just wanted to hear his voice. But he sounded dismal and so sad. I missed him so much. Anthony, I don't think Braden would be at the party. I know he's not at the party. Why did I say I don't think? Of course, he's not. But I wish upon a million stars otherwise. Why not, Mom? Did you not invite him? Every time Anthony asked a question about Braden, Josephine stopped doing whatever she was doing, and it was getting late. Honey, I need to get ready. Braden couldn't come. He had other plans, and no more questions, please. Natalie's home was only a $28 cab ride from Josephine's house. They are late, but having a Spanish heritage was an out-of-jail card for tardiness to any parties. Natalie has a limo ready to drive them to the Millennium Hotel on 44th and 7th Ave. But first, a pre-drink fest. In the kitchen to kick off the night. Natalie's cousin Tony was in the kitchen with a cork opener in one hand while holding a bottle of Prosecco with the other. He smiled like a Cheshire cat when he saw Josephine. Tony put his arms out, wanting to hug her. Instead, she held out her right hand for a handshake. Since Tony's hands were full, Jose shrugged her shoulders and said hi, then left him standing by the kitchen door. Natalie was happy that Jose has made it to the party with Anthony while she was still playing matchmaker with Tony. Hey, girlfriend, I'm so happy you made it, but I had my doubts. Did you see Tony? Oh, God, Natalie, really? Are we doing this tonight? Jose was getting a little annoyed with Natalie. In truth, Jose was upset at herself for not being with Braden instead. Come on, Jose, you gotta kiss somebody at midnight. Why not my cousin? Not good enough for ya. Or in your case, only Braden is good enough. Natalie may have intended it to be a joke, but the tone was dead serious. I have Anthony with me, so he's my date tonight. I will kiss my son to start the new year. Laughing, of course, Josephine wanted Braden at this party. Their last conversation on Christmas Day made it impossible. She knew herself that she had made it impossible. Okay, I will buy that, but wait and see. You never know. Natalie's not convinced, further fueling her determination. By now, there are 8 or 9 people in the kitchen as glasses are handed out. Tony started pouring and strategically leaving Jose to be the last so that he could talk to her. Natalie called out, "Cheers, everybody." All you could hear was the clanging of glasses while Tony inched closer to Josephine. "Hello again, you look amazing, Josephine. Remember me?" Tony, Natalie's cousin. Josephine was already annoyed that she couldn't send Tony away. To Alaska would be nice. Hi, Tony. Natalie mentioned that you would be here tonight. I thought you would have gone back to Philly by now. Was it Mechanicsville? I'm impressed that you remembered Josephine, so you were listening. Half laughing, Josephine had no interest in being part of this conversation. Oh God, kill me now. Oh yes, I was listening, and it wasn't that long ago Christmas Eve, right? Anyway, I just thought you would have gone home for New Year's Eve with your friends. Oh God, Josephine wished Tony had gone home instead of torturing her in Natalie's kitchen. Just over 5 more hours to midnight, the minutes are ticking away slower and slower. Well, I heard that you will be here tonight. So that gave me the nudge needed for me to stay a little longer. What the hell for? Josephine quietly yelled out in her brain. Oh, that's nice. Have you met my son Anthony? Let me go find him. Jose did a 180 and took off to find Anthony. She needed an excuse as good as any to get away from Tony. The limousine ride to the hotel was uncomfortable. Anthony had a great time since he had never been in one. People were joking and laughing from one conversation to the next. Josephine just kept smiling, but hadn't heard a single word. It was a lot of noise from a dozen people in a tightly enclosed area. Josephine felt completely alone while her mind was on Braden. What is he doing right now? He is probably at his dumb office party, and Lisa will be there. I should have called him before tonight. He left so many messages, I'm so stupid. Hey, Jose, Planet Earth is calling. Are you here? Natalie sees Josephine's face and knows her mind was elsewhere. It's the first time Natalie realized that Braden was not just an infatuation or a punchline at a party. It was so much more to her best friend, as it's clearly evident. Natalie, I'm fine. This is a great idea to get out and paint the town. It's even better that Anthony is with me. I appreciate the invitation. Really, I'm fine. Josephine kept saying the right things, but Natalie wasn't buying it. She had known her best friend for many years. The problematic years that led to her courage to divorce Joe were the toughest. Her friends and family on both sides abandoned Josephine for her decision. They just didn't or wouldn't want to understand. They passed judgment without knowing the pain and the suffocation she had to endure. Josephine lost everything the day she signed the divorce application, but no one gave her the empathy to understand why. Josephine, seriously, you can leave any time you want. I can see it on your face that you need him more than ever. I get it. The ladies were close to tears, but they held it back, so they didn't mess up the makeup. They hugged and kept closed until the limo stopped. They have arrived. Braden was behind the bar showing Amanda how to make a revolver. He was having a fun time that took his mind away from Josephine. Bradley, why the hell are you behind the bar? Lisa's voice cut clean through the room. She had been looking for Braden all night since Andy told her that Braden had arrived. She looked at Amanda and knew immediately why he was back there. Lisa knew about Braden's fixation on beautiful redheads, and Amanda was as good as they came. Bradley, are you done? Stop flirting with the help. The words landed heavier than she intended, or maybe exactly as intended. Amanda heard Lisa loud and clear and immediately attended to another order on the opposite side of the bar. Braden turned. Lisa, chill. That wasn't very nice of you. What the hell is wrong with you? Amanda didn't know my drink, so I made it myself. You have a problem with that? Braden sounded pissed. Not so much for what Lisa said, but that moment of euphoric peace he was having was now lost. Lisa shrugged, already regretting it. Bradley, I know you and your fetish for redheads. This is an office party and she's the help. I want you to have a good time, so please try to do just that, will ya? Well, Lisa, I damn well was having a good time until now. Braden took his drink and walked away from Lisa, leaving her at the bar. Lisa called out to Braden, but he didn't look back. Braden saw Andy talking to a petite Asian woman whom he had never met before. Look who is fraternizing with the help now. Braden walked over to Andy and the mystery woman. Hey, buddy, thanks for the warning about Lisa. That was as much fun as slicing my wrist. It would have been better if I did. Laughter broke out, looking directly at the girl. Hi, Braden Beckett. We haven't been introduced. Braden held out his hand to the petite woman between him and Andy. Hi, Braden. I have heard of you, and Andy here was just talking about you. Oh shit, please don't believe a word Andy told you, they are all lies. Smiling, well, Andy said many nice things, so he lied. Hi, my name is Emily Hayes. Emily was not hired help for the party, not at all. She started working for the company in the middle of December. By now, Andy felt like a third wheel while Braden and Emily were getting acquainted. Andy was not happy with this arrangement. Emily, come with me to the bar to get a drink. Andy wanted to pry Emily away from Braden and their conversation. Thanks, Andy. I would really appreciate it if you could get me a vodka cranberry. Thanks. This wasn't the outcome Andy had in mind, and now he's being sent away, leaving them alone. What were his choices, say no? Andy reluctantly heads to the bar. By the way, Emily, the nice things you heard about me were all lies. I wanted to be upfront with you before you find out the truth. Emily was rather short, so she had to look up to Braden to find the eye connection. The rest of Emily matches her height small. She smiled a lot, but looked rather uncomfortable when she did it. Emily was one of those girls who hated having her pictures taken. It's not about the lack of confidence. It's just not her thing to stand out, not on purpose anyway. I have been with the company for a few weeks now. Your name came up often, so I was curious about who this Braden guy was. Now I know. In that case, you can close the lid to your curiosity, and now, what's your verdict? Braden was intrigued with what Emily's first impression would be of him. Not that it matters, because the Braden now, compared to the Braden before Josephine, had become a completely different man. For one, the old Braden would have never reached out to speak to Emily. The truth was that Braden wouldn't even be at the office party in the first place. Emily was about to respond when the microphone came to life. The spotlights became brighter, illuminating Lisa with the microphone in hand. As expected, Lisa thanked everyone who attended, then she had an announcement to make. I thought I would take this opportunity to share this announcement with you. I am leaving the company in a week, and we already have a replacement. I've been the office manager for the last 6 years, and the company has grown a lot. From a small operation to a mid-sized company with more staff, it's time we have an HR person at the helm. You may have seen her around the office in the last few weeks. I'd like to introduce Emily Hayes, your new HR manager. Emily, come on up. Braden was shocked by the news. Lisa has never said a word about her leaving. He felt jilted that he had to find out simultaneously with everyone else. He thought he was special and should have been told in advance. Strangely, Braden also felt relieved. A silent chapter of his life was no longer hanging out there, looking for a hidden meaning each time he spoke to Lisa or a cross glance from her in a meeting. Emily took the stage and started speaking into the microphone. It's painfully obvious that Emily was not comfortable speaking in public. She managed the usual sound bites and affirmed her commitment to her role, blah, blah, blah. She couldn't wait to get off the stage. Andy gave her the vodka cranberry, and in 3 gulps, Emily emptied her glass. Andy thought this would be the chance to get to know Emily. He was wrong. Emily went straight to Braden. Well, how did I do? I would call you a dear and you got caught in the headlights. Honestly, you were so bad. I hope you're better at one-on-ones. Group sessions were not your thing. They both had a good laugh, making Emily feel more comfortable. Andy saw them together and it pissed him off big time. Andy was a good-looking guy, but he never felt relaxed or engaged with the opposite sex. Most women at the office found that to be an attractive trait for some strange reason. Emily, it's been a pleasure meeting you, and I hope I never have to be called into HR. Wait, where are you going? You gonna leave me to the wolves? Emily was genuinely upset that Braden was leaving. She felt comfortable being herself with Braden, a stranger she met for the first time. There are no wolves here, so you're safe. Mingle, talk to Andy. I think we would like that very much. I have to go talk to Lisa. She's an old friend and I will miss her. Well, nice meeting you too, Braden Beckett. Maybe I will bump into you later. Yeah, maybe, but just in case, good night, Emily Hayes. As Braden turned to seek Lisa out, a wolf descended on Emily. Well, more like a wounded puppy as Andy re-engaged with Emily for the rest of the night. Well-wishers surrounded Lisa with plenty of hugs to go around. While Braden was standing about 10 feet to her left, just enough to catch her eye if she turned her head slightly towards the bar. Braden was no longer pursuing his original plan to get completely shit-faced. He's on to another mission, and that's Lisa. The last 4 hours, Braden has just started on his second revolver, which makes him the slowest drinker in the room. Braden never took his eyes off Lisa. He noticed how she flicked her hair or brushed her bangs away from her eyes. It's poetry in motion of a female goddess mingling with her subjects. He remembered that one crazy Friday night with Lisa after a long work week of misery. Amid his reminiscing, a familiar voice spoke while looking down at the floor. Bradley, what were you thinking? You've been avoiding me all night, and I see you have met our new HR manager. Hey, beautiful, I wasn't avoiding you at all. I was working the room, and yes, I met Emily. Nice girl. Not sure I could rank her as your replacement. Bradley, I know you well enough that you're lying. Wait, Lisa, what the hell was that about at the bar with Amanda? I don't get it. Lisa felt awkward having to discuss her earlier rude behavior towards the bartender. Bradley, I don't know what came over me. I don't know what to tell you. After a few moments of silence, Braden waited for additional explanation. Bradley, do you ever think about that night, you and me? It seemed so long ago. Braden wasn't expecting it when Lisa asked about the night they spent together. It seemed odd that Braden was thinking about that night just before Lisa walked over. Honestly, Lisa, I was thinking about that night just before you came. Yes, I think about it every time I catch a glance at you sitting in a meeting. I say nothing because it felt like a dream most of the time. As with most dreams, it's not real and it fades. I thought it would be best if I never brought it up. What about you? Bradley, swear to God. There isn't another you on this planet. You're so precious and yet you're completely clueless. I don't just think about that night. I think of you all the time. But you seemed so lost and it made me feel helpless. I love you, Braden, but I'm not in love with you because you're not attainable. Braden was confused and speechless. It's unclear if this was a love that never bloomed or a love that never existed. Either way, it felt like the end of something with no name. It was a night that was survived by bits of memories that should have meant something if nurtured. Like in the desert, it dried up in the hot sun and then crumbled into dust. It's unattainable. So, Lise, why are you leaving the company? It's not me, was it? Laughing. Give me a break, Bradley. You're precious but not priceless. No, I got a job offer in California and will be closer to my sister, Michelle. Better weather, better pay, and just maybe another Bradley. No way, I can't be duplicated. God won't allow it. Lise, I will miss you very much. Braden, you will be the only Bradley in my life. Oh, please don't give Emily a hard time. She's nice once you get to know her. Braden already felt that he had made an impression on Emily. Perhaps it's his ego talking, but there's a connection. A kindred spirit association from a sister or a first cousin kind of way. Midnight did not announce itself with fireworks or confession. It crept. It lingered. It waited for weakness. It's almost 11:30, half an hour from welcoming the new year. Braden looked around the room and realized there was no one in the room he wanted to be with at midnight. Not even a hug could make him feel gratified or celebrated. He's overwhelmed with a sickening wave of terror. His chest tightened up like an oncoming heart attack. Braden sees the doorway and then dashes toward it. Emily was heading in his way and nearly got knocked over when Braden ran by. Braden left the party without saying goodbye to anyone who mattered and without caring if Lisa noticed. Snow had begun to fall, and not the romantic kind, but the thin, needling flakes that felt like static on skin. The city wore it poorly. He hadn't realized how cold it was while waving down a cab on the street. He didn't have his coat because he had left it inside the office. There's no time to get it now. Braden needed to get home before midnight. He's looking for Josephine before he turns into a pumpkin or a frog. This very moment of clarity was the only thing that could prevent a heart attack. He jumped into the cab and pulled out a $100 bill from his jacket pocket for a $24 cab ride home. Braden reached for his cell phone, but there was no coat. That's when he realized his lifeline, his phone, was disconnected. Never mind the heart attack. It's a full-blown aneurysm. How the fuck can I forget my cell? I can't call her now. Tonight, the next 28 minutes before midnight, will determine Braden's happiness for the next 28 years. The Millennium Hotel near Times Square was buzzing with locals and tourists. The great anticipation for the big annual event, when all eyes across the universe are on the big NYC ball to drop at midnight. Anthony felt like a VIP when he stepped out of the limo in front of the hotel. The concierge came to greet them as they got out. Josephine felt more festive after a few glasses of champagne during the ride. The fact that Anthony was having such a good time has made her happier. It hasn't been easy for him to see his parents splitting up, especially over Christmas. For just one night, he looked like a happy kid again. Hey, Josephine, it's nice to see that you're enjoying yourself. Can't wait to get in front of Times Square with you at midnight. Tony wishes for a miracle that Josephine was his dream date. He didn't know anything about Braden. He knew Jose was separated and thought he could be the missing link. Tony, I don't know what you have in mind. If I have given you any false indication, then I'm sorry. I hate to spoil your night, but nothing is going on between us. I'm seeing someone, and he's all I can think about. Josephine couldn't believe what she had just said to Tony. It wasn't necessary, but she needed to hear it herself. Josephine, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were seeing someone. Natalie didn't tell me a thing. Josephine felt like shit, as if she had just kicked Tony in the testicles on New Year's Eve. Perhaps it was the only way to get her point across. Natalie had arranged a late dinner for 9 p.m. at the steakhouse in the hotel. The food was more wonderful from one course to the next. The awkwardness between Tony and Josephine was so apparent that Natalie noticed it immediately, but not before her shrimp cocktail in a crystal martini glass. "Tony, what the hell is going on? You haven't said 5 words since we sat down. Are you feeling sick?" Tony's disappointment was written all over his face, but he couldn't say anything, especially to Natalie. "Nady, I'm fine. I missed my buddies in Philly. We celebrated the last 3 New Year's Eves with a kick-ass party. Now it's fine dining and all dressed up. I'm just out of my element, that's all." "Bullshit, Tony. What happened? Did something happen between you and Josephine? What the hell did you do?" "Nothing, Natalie, nothing happened. Exactly that, nothing happened and nothing will happen." "Ah, I see, you blew it, didn't you? Natalie, you should have told me Josephine is seeing someone. You should have." Damn it, reality bites, and now it's Natalie's turn to feel like crap. "Sorry, Tony, I should have, but it's a strange situation and I thought there was a chance. I meant well, I really did, I'm sorry." "That's okay, Natalie, that's how you have always been and I know you mean well. After dinner, I'm heading back to Philly." "No, Kaz, please stay for the ball drop. Come on, please stay." "I don't think so, Natalie, but thanks anyway. I'm heading back right after. For dessert, at least." "I'm heartbroken, not crazy, of course. I'm staying for dessert, are you nuts?" Laugh. Hearing Tony laugh made Natalie feel a lot less guilty about her failed matchmaking scheme. Now she's thinking about Josephine. How's she doing? Josephine went through the motions with an occasional smile of acknowledgement and a few laughs for emphasis when necessary. Her mind was jumbled with a lot of Braden and nothing about this fine meal in this beautiful hotel. As the proceedings ended with the last round of fancy desserts and whiskey, it was already 11:20. Josephine looked around the table full of happy people. Perhaps not so much for Tony, and she knew the reason firsthand. It couldn't be helped, but it was the necessary evil, even if it meant losing her best friend. Deep down, Josephine knew she should not be here. She should be having the time of her life, but she's miserable. She knew the exact reason, too, and the urge to do something about it became unbearable. Josephine got up from her chair and looked directly at Natalie, who sat across from her. Natalie knew precisely what Jose was saying to her telepathically. "Hey, Anthony, how would you like to stay with your auntie Natalie and watch the ball drop in Times Square?" Anthony looked over to his mom and was somewhat perplexed. "Mom, aren't you going?" Josephine smiled, then replied slowly. "Anthony, Mommy has something important to do, so I'm hopping you enjoy the night with Auntie Natalie if it's okay. She will drop you off at home later in the morning, and I'll be waiting. We can go to a movie or something. What do you think?" "Wow, a movie, that's cool. See you in the morning, Mommy." All that was said, going to the movies was the only thing Anthony heard. Josephine leaned over Anthony and gave him a big hug and a kiss. Then she mouthed the words thank you to Natalie, then quickly exited the hotel lobby. The concierge secured a taxi for Josephine. It was a mini miracle to flag down a cab in New York City that quickly, at 11:30 on New Year's Eve. Once Josephine was in the cab, the driver asked for the address. 159 Ivy Street, and please hurry. It's really important that I get home before midnight. The cab driver laughed and then asked, "Will you turn into a pumpkin, lady? Just pay me first if you do." The driver thought it was funny, but not to Josephine. She picked up her cell and dialed Braden. The voice message came on with full anticipation of telling him how much she loved him. "Damn it. Where are you, Braden? I missed you so much. I need you. I love you." To Josephine, this cab ride was a matter of life and death. She didn't want her love to die at 12:01 on New Year's Day. She must be home in the next 28 minutes, or this ride would be her deathbed. Both lovers were racing to get home, and the clock was ticking toward midnight. It had never been this clear that love was the only connection left unsaid between them. The clarity to yell it out as loud as you could, so no distance could get in the way. Would this be the end if they couldn't get hold of each other before midnight? New Year's Eve carried a strange pressure, like lungs waiting too long between breaths. To them, it symbolized their commitment to transitioning from the year of old to the new. It's a marriage starting fresh with a promise. This declared love was the start of all promises to come as long as they were together. It's a leap of faith. They saw a car racing toward the top of a cliff, only to find no bridge to cross. It's a 1,000-foot drop and not a net to protect them. Praying for angels, wings to carry both across safely was more than a miracle. It's an impossible love that should have never happened, yet it did.